Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to take a spin.
With shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in New York City. I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. And welcome back to all of our amazing listeners who lately have been extremely vocal and supportive, and it means the world.
Wig.
I truly.
Okay, wait, Dylan, a few minutes ago, /30 minutes ago, you were telling me about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yes, because I finally started watching it, which it's, you know, 3 years too late for me because it's... I feel like Maisel, it's inextricably connected to the theater world because it films in New York. You see a lot of your favorites.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I would have watched it sooner if someone would have told me that it was Gilmore Girls, but make it 1950s, mm-hmm. but make it fashion, but make it Mad Men world, but make it less crazy Amy Sherman Palladino dialogue. Because, you know, I talked about this with my coworkers. People don't really talk like that, but in this world where it's like comedy, they're snappy and referential.
Very Alex Borstein.
Very Alex Borstein. It's great.
Wait, this is a dramatic confession. I've never seen an episode of Marvelous Mrs.
It's really
Mrs.
good.
Maisel.
It is really good.
What is it, Miss or Mrs.? It's Mrs.
It is Mrs.
Yeah. She's great. You know, Rachel Brosnahan.
Mm-hmm.
In the summer of 2016, I was an intern. I know, your jaw's on the floor. I was an intern. And it was at the New York Theater Workshop in the East Village.
Oh, yes, I remember.
It was so fun. It was the summer that Hadestown was playing off Broadway. I think that was its first professional run.
Yeah, at least in New York.
At least in New York. But in the fall, actually, because I oddly stayed on for a long time.
Career intern,
as I joked about famously. But anyway... I was interning there, and Rachel was in a production of Othello there with Daniel Craig, a.k.a. James Bond, and David Oyelowo, and Finn Wittrock, who's always working, but like maybe famously from American Horror Story.
Yeah.
I think he was nominated for an Emmy for American Horror Story.
Okay.
Maybe at least one Emmy. But anyway, Rachel was there, and she was so nice. She
actually said hi
to all of us. I think her like biggest credit at the time was House of Cards.
Okay.
Emmy nominated for House of Cards. Awards gay. But she was super nice, super, super nice. And then when I saw she got Maisel, I was like, oh my God, she actually said hi to the interns. Like, she was so nice.
Yeah. And then we sat by her at Head Over Heels.
Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah.
We are connected to Rachel.
Yeah. Maybe she'll come on Drama at some
I know.
Point.
I need to watch the show. I heard it's great.
It is really good. It is really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, the writing is solid. It's visually gorgeous. And like I said, it's glamour.
Yeah. It's like Gilmore Girls, but make it Jewish.
Yeah. And you know who else is glamour?
Oh. Tell me, Dylan.
Our guest today.
Yes, God.
Our guest today is an accomplished performer, author, playwright, and yes, Grammy-nominated artist.
Oh!
Hailing from Detroit, Michigan, she is inextricably linked to the Fiddler on the Roof extended universe, having appeared as Huddle in London, Zeidel on Broadway, and wrote the gorgeous, sweeping novel, After Anatevka, chronicling Huddle and Perchik's lives beyond the Shalem Aleichem stories.
Oh,
stateside. You've also seen her in Masterclass, Arlington, Hello Again, Einstein's Dreams, My Fair Lady, Cabaret, and so much more that we can't include it.
Oh,
in London, she made her West End debut at the ripe age of 21 in The Woman in White.
That is a young age.
It is young. One of the youngest ages you can be. Along with Carousel and Kiss Me, Kate. She published a second novel, White Hot Grief Parade, appeared on all iterations of Law and Order, is an opera star, an Angela Lansbury expert, and has a legendary cat named Tatiana. Please welcome to Drama,
Al Silber.
Oh my gosh, you guys.
Hello.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, it means a lot that you decided to do this.
Oh my gosh. Also, that intro was so nice.
Oh,
thank you.
You've done so many
things. Couldn't even include everything.
Wow. You know, sometimes you forget, you know? Like, you're on... There are so many days that I feel like I'm sitting on the sofa watching Murder, She Wrote with Tati, and I'm like, Tati, am I a loser? So it's kind of every once in a while you hear that and you're like, oh no, I've done some stuff.
Oh yeah.
And there's always more to come.
She wrote.
She sat down and she wrote.
Yeah.
Oh, Angela, she's my
Is it all on any of the streaming services?
So like I'm here to help you out.
Yeah.
This is why we brought you here.
Thank you. I'm so glad. This is a PSA. Yeah. So a couple years ago, the whole series, all 12 series were on Netflix, and okay. then on a fateful January 1st, it was removed. And really oddly, Netflix didn't appeal to my change.org petition that I absolutely started in real life.
Wow. Can we still sign it?
I think so. I do get like updates about it. You know, when you like start one and they're like, no more people have signed. Mm-hmm. But to no avail, fine. On Amazon though, you can stream seasons 1 through 5.
Okay.
How many
seasons are there?
12. I'm so glad you asked.
Wow.
And like 24 episode seasons or something?
Yeah,
like that,
22
or?
To 24 episodes. Okay. I can't believe I know this.
I love.
And my boyfriend for Christmas this year got me the complete 12 season box set DVD.
He's a keeper.
Yeah. I was like, oh, well, I have to marry you.
He gets you.
Also because like if we get divorced or break up, I don't want him to take
Yeah.
the box.
Well, just make sure he takes the second half, because then the first
he
half.
He can take the first five seasons, yeah. and I'll have everything yeah. I need.
Because then you'll have it still
I really
on
don't
Amazon.
Understand why Amazon like doesn't get on board and realize
yeah.
that
yeah.
at least one person is streaming it on a daily basis.
I think I actually read, this is jogging my memory, that the new streaming service Peacock will uh-huh. have all of it.
Oh. Well, then they just have a new subscriber.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
that's me.
Peacock has a lot. They just
I don't even know.
Everything.
I've never even heard of Peacock.
Yeah, it's NBC's streaming answer. It's coming in July. It's going to have like Parks and Rec, Friends, The Office.
If you will, drama. that's very exciting.
Yeah.
So yes, it's all of this is to say thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, we
love.
Yes.
We
are such big fans, truthfully.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Well, it all started with Fiddler, which that gorgeous Broadway production.
Yes. Oh my God, we loved it.
We were in a
much documented high school all-white production in Ohio, as happens, of
Who
Fiddler.
Who did you guys play?
I was Mendel, the rabbi's son.
Very strong. And you were?
I was... Okay. He was a Russian.
Uh-huh.
He had three lines.
His name was Sasha.
Sasha. And he said, wait, I had an yeah. iconic line.
You know, you're giving me Sasha vibes.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I
oh
see
my
it.
God.
I see it.
He had this line where, okay, this was the line.
Uh-huh.
What's with you,
Fiedka? Yeah, what's with you, Fiedka?
Yeah. And I remember I did it the first time for our director, and I paused before saying Fiedka. I was like, what's with you, Fiedka?
Good. An excellent choice.
And the director was in the auditorium, like hiding in the back, like in the dark, you uh-huh. know, with that like odd light that
sure.
they sit with. And he goes, wonderful.
I remember Gunlick saying that.
I was
that.
Like, yeah. oh, he, I made a choice.
You made a choice.
Yeah.
So we're sitting in the back like Michael Douglas in Chorus
yeah.
Line.
Yes.
Like, and there's like, wonderful. Great. And you're like, I'm going to be in the theater for the rest of my life.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I
it was
love
great.
It.
It was so great.
Did you get to sing the
No.
They gave it to a senior.
Which
junior.
I get yeah. it. I get it.
Yeah,
they
fine.
Wanted to give him his time.
I want you to feel that this is a family. I also did Fiddler in high school. I gave you sophomore year in high school, Golda.
Wow.
Oh my God. I have so many photos that you might have to like link
yeah,
on.
But you're definitely
yeah,
sharing.
I think that's
sure.
a strong. There was like a mop hat.
Oh my God.
So really,
did you
really
do
strong.
Any like older makeup? I mean, because Golda, we don't really know how old she is.
No, I think I just, you know, conveyed it with yeah. my physical choices. No, I don't know. No, I didn't. I think our Yenta did. I'm still in touch with that lovely girl.
Oh.
Katie Battersby and Deke. She's still in the area. She's got three cute kids.
In Detroit. God.
And she was tremendous as Yenta.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's a great role.
You can steal yeah. the whole show.
You can steal the whole show. Mm-hmm. And I believe she did.
Oh my God.
That's
she
incredible.
She got the pathos. She got the comedy.
Mm.
Anyway, it's just the best. And it's kind of like, the thing that's so wonderful about Fiddler is at every stage of your life, you connect with it. You know, when you're young, you're connecting with the daughters and the suitors about changing the world and wanting to make the world your own. And as you grow up, it becomes about children and faith and family and of course about political themes too.
Absolutely.
It was really powerful to, I mean, I'll never forget as long as I live, the matinee the day after the election.
Oh my God, right.
It was a really powerful day. And you just sort of go, well, art is here to heal us.
Mm-hmm.
And and also just an incredible family. It was a really special cast. Yeah. Really special.
Well, I remember the framing device of that revival was one of the most beautiful things I had ever seen.
So subtle.
Danny Burstein in a red jacket.
Yeah.
And he returns to this. Is it the site of what was on a temple?
Yeah, I think, you know, we tried to keep it really vague so that it could sort of be whatever you wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But Danny Burstein, a man played by Danny Burstein.
A civilian
is in a red jacket and he's holding a book. And is it a diary? Is it a copy of Shalom Aleichem's Tevye's Daughters? Is it a stack of letters? Is it a journal? We don't know.
Yeah.
But wherever he is, something about the book and coming upon this sign that says Anatevka hanging from the ceiling summons a historical memory in his psyche. And before you know it, 40 people are rising from a staircase in the back of the auditorium. I will never actually forget first preview, particularly.
At the Broadway Theater,
November 20th. It was like a really specific memory in my mind. You know, the first preview is always stressful no matter what, but it was just one of those things where we were, stress, and the cast comes up that staircase and the orchestra is dun, 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 and we sing Tradition, and the entire 1,700 seat theater erupts with applause, which you feel is like this Fiddler's Back on Broadway.
Yes.
And I just thought, I don't know that I'm ever going to feel anything like this.
I have chills all over my body.
Me too. I've got goosebumps remembering it. It was really spectacular. And you just feel like you're a part of something so much bigger than you.
And you have been a part of it for a long time. As you mentioned, you did it in high school, but then you also did it in London.
I did do it in London for about 2 years, top to tail.
Oh, wow.
We started, this is hilarious. We started it at the Sheffield Crucible Theater, which is not dissimilar to Hartford Stage or Paper Mill Playhouse.
Okay.
A place, a beautiful regional theater where things transfer a lot to the West End. And we were their Christmas show. Hilarious, right?
Wow.
I don't think any of us really anticipated it transferring, but it was such a beautiful production and really interesting for me. I was one of only two Americans in the production and one of only three even remotely Jewish cast members.
Interesting.
Which is just, it was a really interesting cultural experience in that way.
Sure.
And of course, like, if you think about it, Fiddler is this piece that is based on short stories written around the turn of the century by a Pale of Settlement European Yiddish writer with no concept of, you spoke about Maisel, the Borscht Belt comedy, the secularization of the Jewish culture after the Holocaust. All of that was way, way, way ahead. And of course, the piece itself was written in the 60s in the middle of like the sexual revolution, all these things that really sort of made it what it was. But written by secular American Jews 20 years after the Holocaust. So it's sort of, there really is a distinction between the voices of the original and its interpretation. But what was really fascinating was when you're doing a endemically American piece in a European country like England, there are like cultural differences. Like the comedy doesn't land in the same way. The rhythm is different. Huh. The cultural references aren't the same. And the Jewish diaspora isn't as prevalent there. It's a officially Christian country.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was a really interesting experience. And the Broadway shine of it, if you will, was sort of taken off and replaced with like a klezmer orchestra and just a totally different experience. But the Huddle was a very, very special time in my life. And it's obviously a special enough character to literally write a novel about.
Which we love the novel.
Thank you. I loved it.
Thank you so much.
It was hard to read. I have to be honest with
you.
But beautiful.
Thank you. I know it's dark. It's hard. And it's hard to see some of your favorite characters put through such tough things. I actually was talking about this weekend because I was doing a book event for a group of sort of older women in Chicago. And that was like a thing we were bringing up. And I was saying, as I kept... First of all, you want to be like set in Siberia, comma. Like, what do you think is like this book right, going to be about?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it was one of the most violent and tumultuous times in Russian and even European history. And I think one of the things I was discovering as I kept doing the research about what happened to people when they were sent to these penal, penal servitude camps, particularly people that weren't married but were unmarried but affianced, if you will.
Yes.
In the case of
in the case of Huddle and Perchik, I think the sort of horrors that they faced were so inexplicable and unbelievable. And I thought to myself, I'm reading about things that happen to real people, and there are people that that endured this, and some of them lost their lives valiantly, and some of them incredibly survived. And by not including the realities of that, I diminished their legacy. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, and I believed in Huddle and in her spirit, and yeah. Of course, it like in a way like breaks your heart to put your friends through these horrible things. I put huge quotes here, but
sure.
But I felt like I dignified her by letting her overcome those things.
She's a literary heroine now.
I hope
It's one of those things where, there's so much I want to talk about, but I don't want to spoil anything.
I know there's so many spoilers. I know.
But because it's written in, it's like basically three acts.
Exactly. It's exactly why I wrote it that way. A theater piece. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to feel like a three act play.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh my God, of course. Well, you know, and I have to just give a quick shout out to my favorite character in the book, Dmitri Petrov.
Thank you.
Oh, icon.
You fall in love with.
Yeah.
And I mean, the whole cast is truly a cast.
The cast.
Oh my God.
The cast. Well, it could be. You never know. You never know. Dmitri, you know, it's funny. So Dmitri Petrov, for those of you who haven't read the book, is a sort of a new character. He's an original. We meet a lot of people through flashback from Anatevka,
yes.
Seidel Hava, Golda, and a lot of people that are very vaguely referenced from Perchik's past that we really don't know anything mm-hmm. about. I sort of summoned the majority of it. But Dmitri is one of his comrades in the Siberian camp, this cellist, incredibly socially awkward man. And I can't reveal too many things about him, but I will say, I think you would find this really interesting. I certainly did. Dmitri is the only creation that's ever shown up fully formed in my brain.
Wow.
I can't take credit for him. The way I felt about him, and I really, really mean this, was like one day I was writing, doop-a-doop-a-doop, and the doorbell rang, and he was like, hello. I'm Dmitri Petrov. I have chosen you to tell my story. Do you have a pen? And I was like, yes, hold on. I mean, it really truly felt like when you think about that, like Elizabethan form of not being a genius, but having a genie that sits on your desk and speaks to you from the gods. And you're like, hold on, slow down. Yeah. The way Shakespeare did.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting sort of way to think about creativity where it really isn't you've mm-hmm. just been selected, if you will. Mm-hmm. It felt like that. And so I'm just grateful he picked me because I love him.
Phone rings, door chimes.
In comes Dmitri.
Honestly.
Exactly right.
Well, he's amazing.
Thank you.
I also love the only female new character written for mm-hmm. the story. I also loved her as well.
Irina.
Yes.
She's special. She's really special. I tried to give a really nice handful of the majority of people that were represented in my research.
Okay.
From, you know,
because you went to the land.
I went to Siberia.
Yeah.
Literally went to Siberia and lived in a yurt.
Which sounds like a Discovery Channel special Bear Grylls type scenario.
I know.
Whoever that is, I just know that he does this.
Yeah, what is Bear Grylls?
Doesn't he do like adventure survival stuff?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
I don't think I could watch that show.
His name's Bear, I think.
I think his name's Bear. And you sort of like, well, what did you think that guy was going to end up doing with his life? You know what I mean?
It was written in the stars.
It was exactly. You're just like charging that kid to be irresponsible with his survival skills.
Yes.
But, so you were perched in a yurt.
Perched in a yurt. And I.
Potential title
and it was
of the episode.
An amazing, amazing, amazing. Cultural, historical, and experience. And then additionally, sometimes I think when your soul is having the experience of growth and a journey, if you will, sometimes you do need to match it with having a geographic experience to parallel it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was going through a lot of changes at that time in my life. I was on the verge of moving back from London to mm-hmm. America. A huge, really crucial and important relationship in my life was ending. And I was starting to sort of break out and consider myself a writer or, you know, hoping I could be a writer.
Absolutely.
All those things. So I think a lot of things were changing and it was impactful to take what kind of felt like a pilgrimage mm-hmm. for me. And I was different when I returned. And that's, I don't know, I think that's like one of the oldest stories in the world, isn't it? It's Dorothy, it's Bilbo Baggins, it's
drama.
It's Odysseus. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And you sort of stand in the exact same spot as when you left, but you're different.
It reminds
me. Little Red, I know things.
Yeah, I know things now. Thank you.
Or Jack, when he says, like, in your back again, only different than before.
Exactly.
After the
exactly.
sky and into the woods.
Thank you, Into the Woods.
Yeah.
Little Red is my spirit animal. She's the one I'll never play.
So can we really quickly transition into the series that you have curated and conceived at Feinstein's 54 Below?
Yes, I
with
wish.
Jen Sandler, you guys do this I Wish series.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. It all started with a tweet.
Hasn't it all?
Don't we love the internet? So it all started with a tweet because Little Red in Into the Woods really is my spirit animal. I think I know her. And a character that in terms of like my body, my age, my everything, I will just never play. It'll never happen.
Sure.
And it's okay. And I think we all have something like that.
Absolutely.
And I thought, one day I just put out a really casual tweet that was like, can somebody just like create a concert series where all of us get to do the things that will never be or things that passed us by? And here are some ideas. Like I sing Little Red and I had all these other examples. Anyway, yeah. Like 30 minutes, 54 Below is like, we'll do it.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Yeah. And before I knew it, this I Wish came true. It was a reality and it has become, you know, I really wanted to curate it to make sure that it wasn't like a bitter, I didn't book that fest.
Yes. Okay.
I'm very strict about it being something that's very much like, I had a dream to do this thing. It didn't happen. We're not going to focus on that. But tonight, it's going to happen.
For one night only.
And like it, what the vibe that ends up coming out of these concerts is just this incredible celebratory party of dream after dream after dream coming true. And I always end it with like a speech that matters a lot to me, which is like, you know, I joke about my campy love of Angela Lansbury, mm-hmm. but in all seriousness, she is my only idol for the reason that she continued to reinvent herself over and over and over again from like, you know, the youngest Oscar nominee back to back at 18 and 19 years old. And then, you know, 25 years later doing MAME and becoming the Broadway star, not just like a Broadway working actress.
Absolutely.
And not even beginning to film Murder, She Wrote and becoming the household name she became till she was 60. Like it just, you know, you sort of go, her character on that show, but also Angela herself prove that it's never too late for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about people like Billy Porter, Octavia Spencer. Vera Wang was an ice skater before she became a designer in her 50s.
God.
Like really, really. And, you know, just wanting to sort of charge everybody to say, like, you've just seen these people's dreams come true that they never thought would happen. I hope it encourages everyone here tonight to go out and continue to pursue yours.
I'm going to sob.
You are.
I'm like shaking.
You're like the great orator of the Broadway. Like that, honestly, like, well, I'll talk
Thank
more
you.
About it during my dose of drama, but like, I need to hear that right now. And like, I feel like you always feel like there's like that little knock on the door of like, hey, there's maybe something that could be or
right
down the road. And that's so beautiful. And I love that these people who we see are like accomplished theater
totally.
Performers still have those moments of what could have been or,
right.
but still having this like acceptance of and pride in who they are,
yeah.
but still being able to celebrate those all those other parts of them is really, really special.
It feels special, and I'm so excited that it's going to sort of keep continuing.
Yes.
Each one has become so, you know, has become bigger and bigger and more celebratory and more exciting, and so now it's a series.
It is.
So I'm really excited.
And
about
there's,
it.
There's the next one is on February 3rd.
February 3rd mm-hmm. at 54 Below 9:30, and then we have follow-ups in April and June. So
oh
watch this
You're
space.
Booked.
We're booked.
Yes.
Booked and blessed.
Really booked and blessed.
Okay, so Al, I'm wondering something else.
Yeah, yeah, tell me.
Are you well?
I am well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Love to hear it.
I'm so well, and I assume you're talking about my health.
Sure. Yeah. It's a question
we like to ask everybody.
Okay, so, well, I'm happy to answer that on several levels. One is literal, because, you know, I haven't talked, like, a lot, but I try to talk openly about, I have a chronic illness. I have an autoimmune disease.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, and it's... I mean, I it's something I kind of share lightly online because mm-hmm. once I really had a handle on what it was, there's just nothing worse. Seriously, there's nothing worse than being like, I'm sick and I have no idea what's wrong.
Oh, sure.
And then everybody kind of, you have to kind of like field everybody else's fear about that. And
yeah.
And also, also kind of field and dodge and process so many people's really lovely attempts at helping you. Like, have you tried probiotics?
Oh yeah.
And you're like, you know,
I have you tried kombucha?
Yeah, like Jamie Lee Curtis's yogurt, like, isn't gonna
Activia.
I'm gonna handle it.
Sure.
This is an unpaid ad, by the way. Yeah. And anyway, so no, once I really got it under control and realized that I was able to like live in a really, I mean, basically like the best you can sort of hope for is like a permanent long term remission. I've been in that for a really long time now, and really lucky I have a great team of people. I take really good care of myself. But aww. I think I also, this all really started when I was like, I started noticing something was vaguely wrong with me when I turned 30. And I was like, okay, maybe it's just being 30 and blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah. I'm working really hard. I'm doing lots of stuff. But by the time I was 32, it was sort of undeniable that I was ill.
Okay.
And it was right when I was starting Fiddler. And I'm so glad Fiddler was there for me because it was such a motivational reason to talk about drama.
Drama. We're in a rehearsal studio.
We're in a rehearsal studio, and there is like serious scene study happening next door. Anyway, you can cut that out.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is I was so grateful that Fiddler was there because it was this reason to get up in the morning mm-hmm. and go live your dream. Don't let this stop you. And on the other side of it, it was like, it's a musical
mm-hmm.
and you can't do any of the things and you can't live any of your dreams if you're not well enough to be there for it. Mm-hmm. It was really perspective giving
wow.
and the people around me that knew a lot about it were incredibly supportive. But I also want to sort of talk about it in my lifetime because I want people to see that it's not like this death sentence. It's not,
sure, yeah.
it's there are much worse things. It's difficult. It's an invisible disease. You know, it's all these things. But if you take care of yourself and are responsible, I mean, not to say that anyone who's not in remission is irresponsible, but
right. sure, sure.
You have to take it seriously. But I've been really healthy and I'm really grateful. There's nothing you appreciate more than money and your health until they're gone,
uh-huh.
you know? And so I'm just so grateful to be here and,
aww,
and
so
be literally
that.
Well. Of course,
you are literally,
literally
well.
Well,
I'm literally well.
Yeah.
And then I'm also on another level, like feeling really artistically excited about
yeah.
all the things I'm creating. And I want to just say in a sort of whisper to you because you okay. brought him up, I'm working on the next installment of What Happens to Huddle. And you haven't heard the last of Dimitri Petrov.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my God.
So
Mike,
I just wanted
mic
to,
drop.
That's, that mic drop. And also like, this is the first I'm talking about it.
Okay.
Well, here on Drama.
Here first. Breaking.
And very excited about my next theater gig, which I can't tell you about yet.
Yes. She's sitting
so
on a secret,
exciting.
But
I'm sitting on a secret.
Okay.
And also I'm so in love. I'm so
okay,
in love.
So one of the things
oh
that
God.
We talk about in Drama is love and life in New York City.
Tell me.
And you're in love.
I'm so in love.
You're in love.
And
who
I think there's something
they?
Really fun about
tell
this.
Me. Bring it up.
You have very phonetically similar names.
It's actually ridiculous.
So
yeah.
you're Al Silber.
I'm Al Silber, and my boyfriend's name is Alec Silver. I know. It's
where's your podcast?
I know, right? I know. It's really weird. Like we live together and we've already like really confused and upset the post office.
Oh, I'm sure.
And, like,
do
spectrum,
you ever like, feel
you know?
Blurry vision in the morning? You're like, is this mine or is this?
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
looking at bills.
Especially
or?
When you're sort of yeah, exactly, because you can just sort of like glance over.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have like swapped credit card moments, and you're like, oh my, you know. But it's actually funny because we did a show together. And I saw the cast list and I was like, that's bizarre. Because I'm also named after my Uncle Alec, which is like just crazy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So crazy. And when I introduced, I was like, hi, Alec Silver. I'm Al Silver. And he's like, that's crazy. And we were friends for a long time and then we weren't.
What production did you meet on?
We did Midsummer Night's Dream at Chicago Shakespeare
okay.
Theater.
This was like in the last year.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Okay. Yeah.
And
yeah. And he's such a cutie.
He's such a cutie.
Oh, I want to see him. We'll look at pics later.
Yeah. Yeah. He, I think his Instagram is Alec_Silver, and he's featured heavily on my cat's Instagram.
Oh, right. I love that.
At I Feel Kitty. They have a very at special. Yes, at I Feel Kitty. What else would it be called? And yeah, he's a really special man and actor and human. And
that's amazing. So you're truly lucky. Well, in many ways.
I am
you're
well glowing. In many ways. Thank you. And it's been a long time. I've dated a lot in the last 10 years, but really believed, and not in like a sad, pathetic blah, way, but was like, maybe this just like, maybe that conventional situation won't be my story. And I don't necessarily think that my relationship with Alec is conventional. He's younger than me. It's a very like Marin Maisie, Jason Daniel-y moment.
Okay.
And yet, like, I think I also realized that, I think I was, tell me if you relate to this. I was seeing a lot of people and going, gosh, everyone I'm seeing is so unavailable. But the real truth was the unavailable person was me.
Whoa. Oh my God. I'm shocked.
You know?
Yeah.
So I've been in a long-term relationship, but Connor is dating.
I can relate 100%.
You're overstand. Yeah.
I overstand. Yeah. I actually told Dylan today, I was like, well, maybe we won't talk about this. No. Someone might be listening.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know. But yeah, I think that I'm holding myself back.
Yeah.
And I fully recognize that I am, but totally. I think it's because I'm not ready yet. And I think it's okay to
that's
admit
okay.
You're not
no,
ready.
And I think if I've learned anything, like I had to really rumble with my fear and what was on the other side of going for it. And that sometimes that's a lot of pain and rejection and discomfort. But, you know, they say in the theater, they say about like auditioning, you will definitely not book 100% of the jobs you don't audition for. And you will definitely not fall in love with 100% of the people you don't open yourself up to in some way. And it's been a profound experience.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I am well.
You are giving me Brené Brown of Broadway vibes.
I'll take that.
Because you're like rumbling with fear. What's on the other side? Oh. Like Brené talks about that being in the arena.
We love Dr. Brown.
Oh, this is very super soul,
her.
Oprah.
I'll take it.
Oh my God.
I'll take it. Yes. I'm down.
Okay, another question.
Yes,
for you.
Please.
This
hit
is something
me.
We ask all of our guests. So, we like to talk about the impetus that might have gotten you into the arts in the first place. We call it a Ring of Keys moment, like when Allison in Fun Home has a moment of recognition. I'm wondering if you had a moment of recognition where you realized that a life in the arts was in the cards for you.
So, I'm just going to tell the audience that I knew this question was coming. And I may or may not have had like 3 out of 10 panic about it. Like, you know, not like a panic, but enough to be like, because I honestly, after much exploration, do not think I had a definitive Ring of Keys moment about being in the theater, because I honestly cannot remember a time when I didn't think that the theater was going to be what I contributed my life to.
And that is brilliant.
Thank you. I think I had moments along the way that affirmed it.
Sure.
Confirmed it, strengthened it. But I've always felt like my life was here to be in service to storytelling. And the theater was my first love. And writing has become another love.
Absolutely.
But I really do feel like it's a service. You have to give your life to it. And I gladly do.
And you have, and it's impacted so many people.
Oh gosh, thank you.
There's this beautiful moment in White Hot Grief Parade where you talk about meeting
Emma.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who at the stage door of Fiddler. Mm-hmm. And it's like this full circle moment from when you saw Ragtime, right?
Oh my gosh, yes. That was one of the affirming moments, honestly.
Okay.
Like the briefer version of the story. By the way, Emma, if you're listening, can you contact me? Because I've never found this girl.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, wow. Oh, that gives me full chills.
I know. I've never found her again. Like, I keep being like every couple of, every couple of weeks, I'm like, you out there, Emma? Hello? But the long and short of it is.
Finding Emma.
Maybe that's the next essay.
That is. Oh my God. The New Yorker is calling.
Right? Exactly. Call me. So basically, my very first trip to New York, which in itself is a epic tale. My family, my dad was in one of his period. My dad had cancer when I was young, which is what White Hot Grief Parade is about. He was in one of his periods of remission, and we all came to New York in 1998. I was 14, and it was so exciting for my dad to be able to sort of take me to New York for the first time. And my whole family was completely in love with the musical Ragtime. We saw the show, and it happened to be one of the weeks where they were doing the Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS buckets. And so the cast was in the aisles and in the lobby. And I remember my mom had sort of saved a $100 bill for exactly this reason, to purchase a poster from the cast signed by everybody. She put the $100 bill in Judy Kaye's bucket. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God. You know, just, it was Alex Strange, the original Le Boy, Stephen Sutcliffe, and Judy Kaye all holding the buckets. And my dad, bless him, who was like had a real little kid energy, like real very young soul, and was just pouring his heart out to these three professional actors from Ragtime about how I wanted to be an actress, mm-hmm. and I was in all the plays. And of course, I'm 14 and I want to be swallowed by the earth.
100%.
Right? You're just like, oh my God, Dad,
stop it. Yeah.
Stop it. And Judy Kaye is listening to him, and she looks not at me, but like into my soul. And she looks at me and says, "You will."
I'm gonna sob.
And I felt it, like it went in. And I say in the book, mm-hmm. paraphrasing myself, but when I die and they do an autopsy of me, they will find on my heart that memory tattooed there. Mm-hmm. It was like the first really truly affirming moment. Fast forward to many years later, I worked with her. I made my Carnegie Hall debut with Judy Kaye and told her this story. I said, "You probably don't remember, da da da." I'm telling her the story, and she goes, "I remember you." She completely remembered this moment. It was huge, a huge, huge mm-hmm. theatrical, like, stone skippage moment.
Yeah.
We've become very, very, very close friends. Mm-hmm. And then cut to, again, a couple years after that, I'm at the stage door of Fiddler, and this girl, Emma, probably 14. She looks like an adult because kids look so good these days.
They are.
God, you know,
retouched by an angel. Yeah.
They don't have acne anymore. They have perfect teeth. Like, it's
they
just,
do.
Where did all that? Oh, anyway, feels unfair. But anyway, she's gorgeous. She just has these braces, and she's there with her dad. And I look, she's so sweet, and she wants to talk a little, sign the program. And I can just tell something's like really special about her. And I ask, you know, "Are you an actress?" And the dad's like, "Tell her, you know, tell her." She goes, I want to be, I'd love to be, I dream to be. And I felt like my dad's hand from the beyond, like, touch me on the shoulder. He's like, "This is your turn." Mm-hmm. Like, it's your turn to pass this story on. And I was like, oh. And I look at her and I can tell she's going to do it. Like, I can tell. And, I go, "You will." And
I'm crying.
Me too.
I'm literally not okay.
Connor crying and I'm crying.
And I walked away, and I wished I could call my dad. You know, I just was like, sure. I've met us tonight. You know, I've met us. I did it, and I met us. And I did the next best thing. I called Judy Kaye.
Yeah.
Aww. And I told her. And I think those are, the thing is that ultimately, like, at the end of the day, the dream coming true of being on Broadway and all of the things that you think are associated with it, of course you wake up one day and it's your workplace. It's where mm-hmm. you know, there are moments you pinch yourself. There are things you get to do that are incredible, but it ultimately becomes work, and mm-hmm. you start to forget how special it is and that you've won the lottery. But it's stuff like that. It's memories like that and the impacts like that that make you go, why wouldn't I give my life to this?
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
That is great origin.
Oh, gosh.
You have such a way of connecting life and just the beauty of life. I think
Thank you.
A way of putting it into words that's so special
that's
and recognizing.
So kind. I think I try to really work actively on making meaning mm-hmm. of existence and trying to pay attention and be humble to those things. And and also try and universalize them. You know, it's not just happening to me. I mm-hmm. want to always be asking the question, has this happened to you too? How can we connect? What do we have in common?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing those
that
stories.
That is so special. Because I love it.
Thank you so much for listening.
Oh, yeah.
With well, such depth and generosity.
Also, Judy Kay is like a character in your book. Like
she's
full
a character,
out, like,
yeah.
She has a major storyline throughout.
She does. Yeah, she does. And I remember sending her the drafts mm-hmm. before, you know, I wanted her to approve of them. And she's like, okay, BRB, crying. It's really wonderful to be able to know her well enough to get her stamp of approval.
That's so wild.
It's really fun.
That is special because you talk about Angela Lansbury being your icon.
Yes.
And they say don't meet your heroes, but then here you are as a 14-year-old
right.
and there's Judy Kay, and then you get to one day call her a friend.
I know.
How special is that? And perhaps rare.
You know, I remember having a similar moment during Fiddler with Rebecca Luker, who mm-hmm. like with as a soprano, like she taught me how to sing. Do you know what I mean? Just listening to her sing, she taught me how to sing. And I remember one time going into the stage door and she was coming out because she was visiting her husband, Danny Burstein. Uh-huh. And she's like, oh, hi, Al. And I was like, she knows who I am. Like, I'll never get over it. And I hope that that one part of me is so grateful to have these people as friends and colleagues. And the other part of me never forgets the 13 and 14-year-old mm-hmm. version that can't believe I'm in right. their lives and their mind, you know?
I feel that I completely connect to that.
You know what I mean?
I have those moments now because through my job, I work with Wicked.
Right,
and
you're like,
and
oh my God.
Wicked was my everything
sure.
at 12, 13, 14. I mean, mm-hmm. obsessed. And every single day I am working on something related to Wicked or the Wicked National Tour. And I have to stop myself and think, This was my perhaps my Ring of Keys
right.
moment or something, and here I am now, however many years later.
Yeah,
it's a part of my everyday life, and I don't ever want to lose that love and
oh,
that excitement.
Oh, never lose that love.
I
you
can't.
Know, it's interesting. I once had a really good piece of advice given to me that I offer you and anyone listening.
Yes.
That sometimes it's really effective to actually say out loud, like when you're in the middle of that, to say out loud, talk to your 12 or 13 year old self, and go, hey, 12-year-old Connor, like, guess what you're doing?
Yeah.
You know, guess what's coming down the line for you? And just, it reminds you that what you're doing really is special.
Oh, that's like at the end of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Uh-huh.
When they get to like the final four, Ru will hold a photo of each queen as like a child.
Oh.
And Ru will be like, what would you tell
yes.
4-year-old Justin
right,
or
right,
something?
Right.
I don't even know who I'm talking about right now. Is that Alyssa Edwards' real name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps Alyssa Edwards. And it's so emotional.
Yeah.
Because you don't think about it.
Right.
You don't think, am I making that version of that myself proud?
Uh-huh.
Or would they have imagined that this is where I am right now?
Right.
Well, you know, we actually had this moment last night happen to us, if I may digress for a second.
Oh, yeah, please.
Which, you actually know this person. When Connor and I were teenagers, the Spring Awakening National Tour was everything to us, and mm-hmm. coming through Cleveland and everything. And Ben Moss, who he's coming on drama soon.
Yes, like future guest of the pod.
He's my musical husband.
Yes, he is, which he's worked with you on the After Anatevka Audible Evening.
We go on tour together doing concerts, and we were in Arlington together.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah, we've known each other a long time.
You were acclaimed for Arlington.
Oh,
yes. Arlington's Angels.
But after we went to go see his show last night at the Duplex.
Oh, what?
I don't can't believe I didn't see it.
I know.
Anyway, it was amazing.
It was incredible. Amazing.
His voice.
I know.
It is angels. It is
angels.
Dreams.
Eating marshmallows.
Yeah,
it 100%. Is. I know. And what I love about what Ben did was he was in a creative funk mm-hmm. and sitting there feeling like so much was sitting inside him, and instead of moping about it, or I don't know, maybe he did mope about it, but took action to heal it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, kind of talk about going back to that imagery of like sitting down and listening to the muse. One of the things I'm hoping Ben will say this when he comes on, but he was talking about, I just promised myself I had to sit down at the piano every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I like will take that metaphor and say, you know, if you go to church or if you're a churchgoer or whatever, it's sort of like also going to the gym. So any form of church
yes.
that people have, you go to the gym. If you take the trouble to walk to the gym, drive to the gym, find a parking spot, change your clothes and get in, you're probably going to work out.
Yes. Yes.
You're not just going to stand there. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I think that's the theory of creativity in general is you just have to show up and go. And once you put yourself in the mindset that it's happening, usually creativity will flow through you. And
yeah, absolutely.
That's and that's incredible. And last night was a testament to what mm-hmm. he had made. And yeah. it was oh, so yeah. exhilarating.
Ugh, he's amazing.
Because kind of, yeah. he did this 30-day songwriting challenge. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of when I did The Artist's Way. Have you ever done The Artist's
Way? Oh, of course.
Yeah, it's like that writing your pages every day.
Exactly.
And like, something will come about if you just sit down and do it.
The theory being that like the pipes get rusty. The pipes stop working mm-hmm. if water's not flowing through them. But if you're using the water every day, mm-hmm. it flows really naturally.
Absolutely.
So. Wow.
Wait, what were you saying though
yes,
about
so,
Ben?
Oh, sorry, Ben.
No. Yes, yeah, so we talked to him afterwards, and I thought to myself, you know, if you could have told me at 15 that not like the stage door counter, which he remembers meeting us
at the stage
and now
door.
He's going to come on our podcast. It's just like,
yeah.
wow, like that is just so special.
Totally.
And life is really, really funny.
Yeah, and you have to like stay awake for it. Don't, you know, one of the things I think is also a really important thing is to just continue to celebrate moments like mm-hmm, that.
Yeah.
I think in our culture, we don't mark things as often as we could.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be huge celebrations, but be like, this is awesome.
Yeah. It's so cool.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, I love it.
Me too.
That's so fun. I want to transition into one other project that you worked on
okay.
before we kind of get to our dose of drama.
Ooh.
You played Sally Bowles.
I did.
In Cabaret.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Girl. Now, was that an I wish moment before it even came to be, or did you ever see yourself playing
you know,
Sally?
It's so interesting that you say that. I think about it now, and I kind of can't believe I did it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, no and yes. Mm-hmm. The answer is, it's not complicated, but the answer is nuanced in that I really had written a story that Sally Bowles was not for me. Like, okay. I thought, well, Schneider's for me. I just need to, you know, wait around long enough. And I remember, interestingly, on the very same trip in 1998, seeing the original Sam Mendes revival. And
Natasha Richardson.
The original cast. It was a huge moment for me. And also, really, wherever you are, Michelle Pach, you had a huge influence on my young life. Wherever you are.
Shout out.
We saw her as Velma Von Tussle in Hairspray.
I mean, she is... Mm-hmm. It. Mm-hmm. She was an unbelievable Fräulein Kost. And so, yeah, I just didn't really think that that role was mine. Didn't think it was in my soul. Certainly didn't think it was in my voice. And the reason why, you know, sort of saying yes and no, it was an I wish, I guess it came my way through a director, Alan Paul, who I've worked with several times. I've done, Cabaret was our fourth collaboration.
Okay.
And I think we are each other's really muscular contemporary muses in a way. I mean, sound a little highfalutin, but it does, you know, I feel so comfortable working with him and I feel like my creative best and I hope, you know, I assume and hope he feels the same way. We did Camelot and many other things together, but he was the one that really brought this to me as a concept. And I was like, you must be kidding. And he energetically and literally said like, trust me. I won't guide you astray. I know you can do this. And I think the lesson, you know, in terms of the casting, I wish part of it is the world. This is not just casting. This is the world. The world is going to put enough limitations on what you can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. Don't do it to yourself. Don't do it to yourself. Don't say, oh, that's not for me. Like, how do you know?
Yeah. And it should be obvious to ourselves, but I feel like we, you know, it's just something that we.
Right. Right. You don't want to. You're afraid to look like a fool. You're afraid mm-hmm. you'll be rejected. You're afraid you'll fall on your face. Like, you might. We're all going to die. Like, you might as
yeah.
well
yes.
really go for it and know that by the time you're Angela Lansbury's age
that's
and looking
right.
in the mirror, all of your successes and failures were achieved honestly and with integrity and courage. I don't want to look back. I don't want to look at myself in the mirror in my, you know, knock on wood, in my 80s and 90s and feel like if only I could have really gone for it.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather have collected some failures through the act of real valiance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sally was a real moment for me yeah. for that. And yeah, never in a million years thought it would happen. And I cherish it as an artistic memory.
I remember living through all your social media posts at the time. And your costumes and
the
your wigs.
We love a good wig.
It was a beautiful production, too. It was just like everything about it was glorious. And yeah, it was a dream come true. And also, yeah, like my Sally was a dark wine redhead.
Yes.
And for me also like challenging a lot of like ancient body image stuff and and like again big lessons like, okay, so I don't love my legs, I never have, but you know who doesn't even think about her legs? Sally. And no one's ever kicked her out of bed, and come to think of it, no one's ever kicked me out of bed
either.
Like, you know, like just taking like I don't want all of Sally's characteristics, obviously, but certainly her when I go, I'm going like Elsie, like, let's do this. Let's live for real and on purpose.
Yes.
Oh, that's brilliant. You know? I love.
So
I wish we could have seen it. I mean, we got to see the little taste of it when you did it here in New York.
Yes.
But the title song.
The title song.
That's right.
Yeah, and you know, you never know. If I'd love to do it again, and if I don't get to do it again, I got to do it once. And that was more than I ever thought I'd get to do it.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're wrapping up, but we like to end.
I'm sad. This has been one of my favorite episodes.
I know, me too.
This has been a lovely talk, you guys.
You're so amazing.
Thank you. You're giving me
drama. You're giving me insight. You're giving me humor. It's all of it.
Fashion. We need to mention. Yeah.
You can't see I'm wearing a shawl.
Yes, we'll take our Polaroid and be able to show that to the crowd.
Yes. Oh yeah, we will show. But so we like to end on a dramatic note.
Great.
And it could be the drama in our hearts and in our lives. It could be a life realization you may have just had. Maybe a post-democratic debate. Musing, maybe a wig that you got to keep from a job you finished, or a job you booked or didn't book, or just something you're thinking about in this very moment. Do you have a dose of drama?
Do I have a dose of drama?
I could kick it off, or Dylan.
I'm happy to kick it off.
Yeah,
Dylan, kick it off.
So you inspire me during this one, but my dose of drama is, without saying too much, I feel like I am on the precipice of a new adventure in my life, or maybe just like the wind is changing, and I sound so vague right now, but I just...
That's drama.
You know how your life goes through these different phases, or like you have to like shed some sort of a skin and grow a new one, and I feel like that is coming for me in this 2020, and it's almost been a long time coming, and it's... rumbling with the fear of change or comfort, maybe being compromised for a little bit to find something beautiful. And I appreciate everything you said today, Al, because it came into my soul.
Oh, I'm so glad.
So that my drama is, and that's true drama, how vague I was being, but like, cause I don't really know where I'm going or what's happening, but I have a good feeling about this year and what's coming soon.
I love it. I say walk toward, lean into that discomfort because there's like answers and data there.
I really believe that.
Yeah. So exciting.
My heart's racing.
Connor, do you have a dose?
What about you?
Oh my God. I have so many things that are on my mind today. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I mentioned this earlier. I'm reading the Call Me By Your Name sequel.
Right.
Find Me. Mm-hmm. Which I have complicated feelings about.
Okay.
I know. I've read Call Me By Your Name every summer. Like literally, I have read it every single summer since 2015. That's a lot of times to read one book.
It is.
But it's really beautifully written, I think. And it's gay and it's fun. And, you know, the sequel is not living up to my expectations. I almost wish it didn't. I haven't finished it yet. But it's kind of like I wish I would have... Or maybe that I hadn't read it because the characters live in a special space in my mind. Mm-hmm. And I was actually thinking about this with your book. Mm-hmm. With you know, you love these characters and you have an ending in your mind about where they go.
Right.
And then you might, what you dreamed of it might not be the actual,
right.
It's kind of like how the TV shows are being revived and we put them to bed.
Completely.
And now, 10 years later, it's like, they've completely changed where we had had our fond farewells with
Will and Grace.
Like
revamping Party of Five. Of course, all of these.
It's like I understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. It makes money and it's nostalgia and it's all these different very varied factors that go into why we're reviving or making sequels however many years later. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes you can nail it and sometimes it's just not fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fun. And you'd rather live in the world that it originally ended.
And I think, you know, interesting. I was actually just talking about this with Alec last night about old friendships and people you knew when you were growing up. And what do you do if you come in contact with people and you don't, like what you have in common now is that you knew each other when you were small and all
we
those things.
Right. All the time.
Right. And I think like, I've been there myself and you know that we all have a right to our memories and we all have a right to it's like everybody being sent the same photo, but being able to put whatever filter they want on it before they post it, you know? You're allowed to do that. That's your prerogative. And, and I think it's the same with our favorite characters from books and TV shows. Like, they will never... you can't extract just because the narrative changes what they once meant.
Yeah, okay.
And how formative they were. Do you know what I mean?
People feel that way about Go Set a Watchman, the sequel to To Kill a Mockingbird, which I actually never read Go Set a Watchman. I don't know if you...
I haven't read it.
Because people said it ruined Atticus, or it, like, changed the way that he was portrayed, and... You know,
did he become a Nazi?
I don't know if it was that.
No, I'm like jumping way ahead in time.
He is not a Nazi in my mind.
He's
at
not.
Least.
Yeah. I think it does create gray areas about this like really endemically heroic character.
Mm-hmm. Or he became like he was like a white supremacist.
I don't remember. We don't want to.
I know. It's troubling.
But it's murky.
It's murky.
I heard it's murky.
Yeah.
I have some drama.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm thinking in like and it's kind of a callback. So maybe this is a nice way to end things. So I was, you know, you're talking about Maisel and Amy Sherman Palladino. Mm-hmm. And I was talking a little bit about my relationship in London that was really significant to me and ended and was one of the reasons I came here. And interestingly, also the concept of like how you feel about somebody when you're in love with them, how you feel just after you've parted ways, how you feel 5 years later, 10 years later. And, you know, I think it's interesting, like new filters continue to get put on those relationships and those memories as you gather more data, kind of like another color cube in the kaleidoscope of the whole picture. But all of this is to say is I was remembering him because we watched every single episode of Gilmore Girls kind of in real time.
Okay.
Oh.
And we broke up just as the finale was airing. And I didn't feel like I could watch the finale without watching it with him. Mm. And I still to this day have never watched the last episode.
Oh my gosh.
And many years ago, just thinking about that, I checked in with him. We're very friendly now.
Okay.
I checked in with him. I was like, by the way, have you ever watched the end of Gilmore Girls? And he was like, no.
Wow. Mm.
And there's something about that to me that feels beautiful. And that like it honors what we were. It, there's something about it that, you know, even though we both love other people and have moved forward, like there was something about that answer that felt like the end of a poem to me.
Oh my, I am shaking. My heart is racing for some reason.
It just came to my mind though because of all the things we were just talking about.
And that's absolutely drama.
It's such drama, yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing everything with us today.
Yes, we adore you.
It means so much, and I think that the people who listen are going to get so much out of just your wisdom and experiences. And if you haven't yet, please read Al's books, White Hot Grief Parade and After Anatevka, both available where fine books are sold.
That's right.
And also follow Al on social media at Al Silbs on Twitter and Instagram.
And follow me at Connor McDowell.
Follow me at Dylan McDowell and follow Tatiana the Cat at I Feel Kitty.
Yes.
You gotta. It's just pictures of Tati with showbiz captions.
I can't believe I don't follow already, but drama will follow and
fix it immediately.
Yes. You know you're gonna love it. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that the Mamma Mia slogan on the poster?
Something like that.
So good. That's how we feel about I Feel Kitty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well thank you for having me.
Thank you. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.